Welcome to the Beer Driven Devs podcast, where your hosts, Matt Goldman and Liam Elliott, share their experiences and passion for technology, software, and of course, beer. So be sure to grab yourselves a cold one and join them for this week's chat.
Good evening, Matt. How are you going tonight?
I'm not too bad, Liam. How are you?
I'm actually doing pretty well today.
You're looking better than last time.
I feel a lot better than last time, thanks.
I didn't say you look like shit.
No.
Even though you always say that to me.
Well, actually, to be fair, just as we jumped onto the call, I did say you don't look like shit tonight.
That's true, you did. What a compliment. Wow, there's a change. Wow, you don't look like shit.
No, it's, I guess coming into spring, it's gotten past the heat of the flu season, right?
That's right. Well, yeah. Actually, I spoke to my GP this week. He called me just because he does every now and then, just calls me to see how I'm doing. And he was saying that, you know, he's been ill and everyone has. I said, oh, it's this thing going around. And I said that I'd been sick for a couple of weeks and had it. And he asked if I'd done any tests. And I said I had, and it hadn't picked anything up. And I was wondering whether it was a new strain that none of the tests are aware of. And he said, no, it's actually blah, blah, blah. And I've completely forgotten what he said it was. Mm. So, but yes, that's the thing that's been going around and afflicting us all. And it has a name.
Oh.
I just can't remember.
Cool.
I'll call him up and ask him and then we'll know for next time.
Yeah. There you go. Easy way. But you know what? That wasn't the only thing that was going around afflicting people recently.
No. There's been some interesting things afflicting people. Have you seen anything funny on GitHub recently?
Not in my account. I've not seen any strange repos popping up. Have you?
Again, not in my account, thankfully. I did see some strange repos popping up, which gave me some concern.
Yep.
And of course, the biggest concern was not knowing where it had come from. Well, of course, now that we know, and it's laughable and a bit of a joke, not for people that were affected, obviously, but I can look back. But I'll admit, you know, because when you don't know where it's coming from, I was worried for a while, and you know,
yeah,
because I look, obviously, I'm going to spoil the big reveal here, but obviously, it arose from an AI tool, right?
Yep.
And I use AI tools, so I was concerned, but thankfully, not an AI tool I use,
mm-hmm.
or anyone I know uses. In fact, actually, that's not true.
That's not true because that's how we were alerted.
That's right. Yeah. So there is at least one person I know that has at least dabbled with this tool.
Yeah.
What are we talking about, Liam?
We are talking about the recent Singularity hack.
Yeah.
I think you can call it a hack. Can you? I guess it's a supply chain attack, right?
It's an interesting combination of things. I mean, arguably it's a hack, depending on your definition. It is inarguably a supply chain attack. It is social engineering. You know, we've spoken recently about a supply chain, and it's, you know, it's so funny. Same thing, right? It's an NPM package vulnerability that got snuck in through social engineering, through exactly the same thing, fatigue in maintainers. And, it, you know, it's so funny. You know, we spoke to Jimmy today. I mean, it wasn't today, really, but it's today that everyone else is hearing it, our time. So the episode released this morning. Actually, I had a bit of a chuckle. You probably saw my message when we were chatting to Jimmy. It wasn't in the recording, but when we were chatting to him, we were sort of releasing that day's episode that morning and just on the call, like, oh, well, I'll merge that PR. And he sort of thought we were joking. He was like, oh, you merge PRs to release episodes. No, we actually do. That's how we release episodes.
That's how we do it. We're devs. That's how we roll.
We're the beer-driven devs. That's how we roll, yeah. But no, interestingly enough, because, you know, exactly what we were talking to him, people think that maintaining an open source package or repo or library, getting overwhelming, can't keep up with demand, just bring on more maintainers. And it's not as simple as that. And there was a very high profile supply chain attack a couple of years ago. And this was, I think, do we know who it was? I think it was a state actor, but this was someone who basically infiltrated this repo over, you know, years, right? So
years,
spent ages.
Not decades, yeah.
Yeah. So this person spent a long time building trust and, you know, gaining trust and support within the community and making contributions and approving and reviewing PRs and contributing docs and contributing code and blah, 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 blah. And got to the point where they were promoted to a maintainer of this repo.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, they snuck in. What was it? Was it a backdoor or was it?
I think it was a backdoor. I'm trying to think of what was that package? It was.
I'm going to look it up. Whatever it was, I believe in this case, it was actually nipped in the bud. Oh, so this was last year, I think. And I think they caught it. But funnily enough, it was actually caught by CrowdStrike, if I'm looking at the same one.
What was it?
Scavenger malware. So there was one that, oh yeah, LogScale. So CrowdStrike did detect one. This is completely unrelated, and this is very recent, actually. I mean, obviously, this kind of thing happens all the time. Actually, this is not new at all. Like, the supply chain attacks in NPM is huge, and it does happen all the time. This mm-hmm. high-profile one, I'm trying to remember what it was, and I can't remember. But yes, it was an individual who gained a lot of trust, effectively infiltrated this repo, and yeah, got promoted to maintainer and snuck some malware in. I'm trying to find which one it was, because there's so many I'm seeing now. There's one that snuck some crypto mining code into an NPM package.
Yep.
Rand user agent.
That's what I'm looking at. We got Discord bot, Okta supply chain, JetBrains, MoveIt, 3CX, Microsoft, Norton, Airbus, SolarWinds.
Oh, yeah, this rings a bell. So one of the vectors, I'm reading this article on Snike. One of the vectors is stale email addresses, right? So this one here is saying that 2,818 maintainer email addresses associated with expired domains, allowing an attacker to hijack 8,494 packages by taking over the NPM accounts. I've seen this before as well, actually. I've seen an account associated with an expired domain, not with a supply chain attack, actually with a spam email.
Yep.
Interesting. There's a lot of interesting vectors here. Anyway, a lot of these, and I'm just looking back through these XML, RPC. Yeah, like this is obviously it's a big deal. It happens all the time. And a lot of these are very sophisticated, years-long infiltration exercises mm-hmm. where these people, as we described, build trust. They, you know, they build the trust and gain the confidence of the community and get to the point where they are a trusted maintainer. And they get to the point where they've got that level of control that they can kind of sneak things through without people noticing.
Yeah. Sorry, just to quickly interject there. I'm looking at the Kaspersky website.
Mm.
I believe the one we're thinking of is the XZ utils in opening a backdoor into Linux systems. That was March last year.
I think you're right.
Which obviously can have devastating consequences for a lot of organizations.
Absolutely.
And individuals.
Absolutely. And now, was this the one that affected SolarWinds, or was that
unrelated? That's a different one.
That's a different one. Yeah. Anyway, so look, as I said, like this is not unprecedented. This happens all the time, right? And it often happens through, as I said, these sophisticated campaigns where people infiltrate these communities and gain trust. But what we're talking about, what happened this week, was it this week or was it last week?
Let me check.
It was last week. It was because it's only Wednesday. So this was the tail end of last week, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not what happened this time, right? What happened this time was exactly what we were discussing with Jimmy, but being concerned about. A particular package which is gaining a lot of popularity. And as I mentioned, it's an AI tool, which means that it's using AI. And there was a very, very novel vector here, which we'll get to. But it was pure maintainer fatigue. Like this was not something that was a sophisticated years-long infiltration. This was a PR that was just kind of rubber stamped, if I understand correctly. And I'm just looking through the issue on GitHub that, you know, posted by the maintainers. I don't have details of how the key account publishment package compromised, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. So effectively, things might have changed. I'm just reading through it. So one of the things that might have happened here is I'm really just scanning through this. But this is a risk, right? So one of the things that might have happened is that someone opened a PR, and the PR, when you open it, created a pre-release version of the package. And then, of course, if you've got people that are set to auto-update and accept pre-release, they then get that compromised version of the package, right? And it doesn't even matter if it doesn't get merged, right? People are already affected. Now, there's been a lot of updates on this thread, right? So I'm trying to work out if that's what's happened here. Last time I read it, that wasn't what actually happened. It was, wow. Yeah, that's kind of what happened, I think. Wow. Oh, this is amazing. So yeah, last time I read, I thought it was a maintainer fatigue and it got rubber stamped through, right?
Yep.
This time it looks like it's a variation. This is actually quite a clever exploit. So what they've done is they've done effectively what I've kind of said there, but also what they've actually done is they've done effectively GitHub Actions injection attack, right? So you know how back when we had SQL injection, where you could put malicious SQL code and you know, supply it to a database, and if it's unsanitized, it just gets executed.
Yep. Yeah, yeah.
What they've done here is they've actually put malicious code directly in the body of the PR itself, right?
So and what's are you looking at this on the repo now?
So, okay, so let's take a step back and let's explain what happened, okay? We were going into a lot of detail and I'm sure a lot of people know what we're talking about, but some don't. Okay, so there's a package called NX.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it is a package, but it's also a quote-unquote platform.
Yep.
Right?
So it's been around for a fair few years now.
It's been around for a while. So NX.dev, it's basically an AI developer platform, right?
Yeah.
So smart repos, fast builds. If you look at their website, NX.dev, drop NX into any repo and watch it automatically optimize your builds, scale your CI and fix failed PRs, built for developers and AI agents. So it's an agentic tool, right? Ostensibly, according to what they're saying here, a developer tool. I have no doubt that there are lots of non-devs vibing with it.
Yeah.
Right? Anyway, so what happened? Well, what happened was a compromised version of their package was released on NPM, right?
Mm-hmm.
This compromised package contained a prompt, like an AI prompt, right? So there was a file that was injected into the package called telemetry.js. So it's a JavaScript file. And what it contained was a prompt. And what the prompt did was it provided instructions to an agent, an AI agent. So if you were using this NX package, but also, in fact, if you have this package and you're using it in something like Cursor,
yep.
right? Or potentially even VS Code with certain vulnerable agents running or mm-hmm. enabled. And this prompt says, basically, the way it was phrased is along the lines of, I want you to audit my repo for any secrets. Any secrets that you find, you know, report back here, right?
But didn't also say, scan my hard drive? Was that the one I saw? Look yeah. through my hard drive, all text files and everything, looking for any, basically any secrets you can find.
It was specifically formatted secrets. So it's looking for like .env files. But yes, it's like search my hard drive, find all these, right? Now, you did see some responses from some agents saying, I'm not doing that. That's ridiculous. You know, you're certainly not going to violate security in that manner, but not others. And what thousands and thousands and thousands of people found was that this agent was creating a repo on their GitHub account called yep. Singularity, S1NGULARITY dash repository dash number, right?
Yep.
And this contained one file, and it was a double base 64 encoded file containing all your secrets. Now, there's a few things that are of concern here, right? One of them is people having potentially production secrets in these environments.
Yep.
But I'm not going to lie and say I don't have at least one repo that has a production secret in it. Well, not in the repo, sorry. No, I don't
the
have
repo,
any repos
no, with
production
secrets. But you might have secrets in your secrets files and whatnot in your VS projects.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, fortunately, this particular prompt wasn't looking for that, right? It's literally looking for, I mean, look, it's a telemetry.js file in an NPM package. It's looking for JavaScript and TypeScript.
Yep.
.m files, basically. So, but the prompt was very cleverly crafted. It included things, you know, like dash dash dangerously skip permissions, dash dash YOLO, trust all tools. There was a lot of careful crafting that went into it. It was probably built using AI. So yeah, but what happens is this thing finds all your secrets, double base 64 encodes them and publishes them in a public repo on your GitHub using the GitHub CLI. Presumably at some point, some tool or agent somewhere is, because from what I understand, there's no callback to a command and control node. It's
sure.
literally just publishing this thing. So presumably at some point somewhere, a tool is set
probably
to
looking for every single public repo with that singularity name. And
yeah, you know, and given that this thing is using the GitHub CLI, looking for those repos using the GitHub CLI is trivial, and you can get thousands mm-hmm. like almost instantly. So, okay. So how did they do it? Right. Very clever. As I said, they used the GitHub Actions injection attack. And what they did was they crafted this very cleverly formed pull request, right? And the pull request exploited a vulnerability in GitHub that compromised the publishing token. So they got the publishing token, and then they used the publishing token to publish their compromised version of the package. That's actually how they did it. Very clever. I mean, look, we don't know the full extent of what the impact of this is. Like, obviously, there's thousands of people that have to potentially change, rotate secrets across God knows what. And here's the other thing, right, is you don't necessarily have to have been a user of this tool to be compromised, right? You have to be someone with secrets that someone has access to that's a user of this tool, even in a completely unrelated project or repo, because as you said, it scraped your whole hard drive.
Yeah.
So if you have had a dev or a contractor that's ever done some work for you that has had access to a secret, and they have ever, as in the case of this nameless person that we know, even dabbled with this tool, your entire organization's secrets could be leaked and you wouldn't even know. Because you don't necessarily have to have been the person that's had this Singularity repo posted, right? You just don't know. How would you know? Effectively, everyone should really be defensively rotating their secrets now, right?
Which, I mean, that's not bad advice, right?
Yeah. And here's the thing, right? Is if you're quote unquote doing it right, you should be rotating your secrets regularly anyway, and you should be set up in such a way that allows you to automatically rotate them all, you know, one click or what have you. How many projects have you worked on that are set up that way?
And I can count them all on no hands.
Right? Interesting. I mean, again, that kind of leads into another conversation that I'm keen to talk about probably next time around just keeping up with all this stuff. Like, how is that impacting innovation and working on more important things or more interesting things? That's a whole other conversation. But yeah, so the number of different steps that have gone into this, it's very, very cleverly crafted, right? Just the exploit on GitHub, very clever, right? Now, with that said, it is pretty lax of the NX maintainers to have allowed this to happen because it is straightforward to block this exploit, right?
Yes, it is. But that's where the 2020 vision of hindsight, right?
No, not necessarily. So I've come across something before. There's a GitHub action. I can't remember what it's called. It's like something pizza. You must have heard of this one. So basically, there's a GitHub action that logs your secrets to the console, right? Open sourced pizza. Is this the one? I'll have to look it up and I'll find out.
What does it do?
Basically, right, what it does is it just gets your, like, all your secrets and just logs them out, potentially logs them out. But of course, if you're piping that output into another action in your workflow, you can then expel it to an API endpoint somewhere. And what you can do basically is if you create a PR and your PR is to add or edit a GitHub action's workflow and put this action in it, you can basically get the secrets out of that repo using this. And because this has been known for a while that you can do this, it's also known how to block it, right? And this is why most repos are set up to only accept pull requests from maintainers internally. Otherwise, you have to fork it because a fork of the repo doesn't have access to the repo's secrets.
Yeah.
So you don't allow non-maintainers to create branches, basically. That's how you block it. And it looks like that's not what they did here. And that's how they could have stopped this happening. If only maintainers can create branches.
Yeah.
Only people that are trusted maintainers could even do this exploit, and they already have potentially access to it anyway through other means. If someone creates a pull request from a fork, that branch doesn't live on your repo, it lives on theirs, therefore doesn't have access to your secrets. This might be the one I'm thinking of. Spicy pizza. This must be the one. Create env file. Yeah, here you go. I'll stick it in the chat here for you here, Liam. Spicy pizza. Create env file. GitHub action to create a .env file with GitHub secrets.
Oh, God. That doesn't sound wise.
I mean, look, arguably has potential uses. Certainly the developer states that there are uses, but I mean, I'm pretty sure it was probably a joke exploit. I could be wrong. But anyway, yeah, like this is not new. Like this has been around for a while. And again, like the exact scenario that I just described has been known for a while. Yeah. Hence the way to block it has kind of been known for a while. And it looks like that's not what the folks over at NX did, which is how the exploiter was able to do what they did. So I'm just looking at this repo. I'm trying to find the first commit, and it looks like it was 2019. So it's like 6 years old, this action.
Yep. Yeah. Look, I mean, it's the only useful use case I can see out of that is maybe in a corporate environment where someone has left the building and you don't know what the secrets are anymore. Right?
Ostensibly, I think that's the use case.
Right? And it's the, let's just run this once to a pull those secrets out,
yeah,
and then forget that we even did that, and make sure, and let's hope that the security team aren't paying attention to what we're doing. That's really the only use case I can see with this. Yeah, interesting. No, I didn't know that existed.
So yeah, that's a fun one.
Yeah, used by 4,700 people or repos. Yep.
Anyone on that list, you know? Oh, look at this, CrowdStrike.
That's the first one I saw. Tutorial quick start.
They're probably using it for...
Yeah, but you know what I mean? You can't use that in a tutorial. Come on.
What the heck?
I don't know, but there's someone there that's got a finance app API. Oh, no. So they're using it. A lot of people are using this in test scenarios.
So using it to deploy their secrets to production. so that you don't have to have your .env file in your repo checked in and have this create it to deploy along with your code. So if you've got, say, you know, like a Node or an Express app, and
yeah,
that's how you get...
But you could still set your environment variables on the machine.
Depends. I mean, depends on your deployment model. You might not have a machine. Yeah. You might not have access to environment variables.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I'm speculating. But in fact, so with that said, I'm actually looking at the workflow on that CrowdStrike repo, and that's exactly what they're doing.
Yeah.
So make env file, run Playwright tests, upload Playwright report, delete app from Falcon.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough.
So they're using that for... So because they're using Playwright and it's automated to log into the browser with interactively, so it's got the username and password. That, I mean, that's one example, right?
Yeah, okay.
So yeah, there's actual use cases here. But as mentioned, right, you know, if you allow non-maintainers to create branches on your repo, there's nothing stopping someone very quickly creating a PR, you know, creating a branch, creating a PR that just literally runs a workflow that does this, grabbing the output, closing the PR, deleting the branch. And unless you're actively looking for that kind of thing, you might not even know, especially if it's a huge repo with lots of traffic. For a smaller thing, you're going to know because you're going to see the emails coming in, right? But for something smaller, you might not. Actually, then again, right?
But by the time you notice it, the damage is done.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Anyway, we're off topic. Like, as I said, it's kind of known how to mitigate that. It's considered a best practice anyway to not allow pull requests from non-maintainers on your repo. I do see a lot of forks of this finance app API that you're talking about.
Yeah, and I think it's just using it for demos.
Yeah, I think so.
Or just testing things out is what I'm seeing. Because, yeah, there's a lot of finance app API or...
Yeah, it's probably some tutorial or something.
Yeah. Node.js gaming project backend.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think, yeah, it's part of some tutorial, probably based off the CrowdStrike one. You know, so I guess traditionally speaking, we kind of like to loop things back around.
Yeah.
But what does this mean for the world of open source? Are we now adding more pressure and expectations onto the open source maintainers and effectively disincentivizing them to continue doing what they're doing?
Possibly. There is something important to bear in mind here, though, which is that NX is a commercial product. Like, it's open source, but it's a commercial for-profit product.
Yep.
Now, let me just have a look at the license. So the license is, it's MIT. So, I mean, it's open. It's an open source permissive license. So I guess people can use this and do what they want with it. And I guess their monetized product is their NX Cloud. So in their case, this is a commercially backed repo. So I think, I mean, I don't know what their revenue is or whether they're profitable. I don't know really that much about them at all. But there is money behind this, right?
Yep.
So is it reasonable for them for there to be a bit of pressure on them? Yes. I mean, there are allegedly paying enterprise customers using this, right? So I'm just looking at the pricing page. So hobby, free forever, perfect for small teams or proofs of concept, included for free, 50,000 monthly credits, which of course means nothing. And then AI integrations, remote caching, distributed task execution, team, start free, pay as you grow, $19 per active contributor, first five free, plus usage overages, five active contributors, 50,000 monthly credits, which again means nothing, 10 concurrent CI connections, AI integrations, support, add-ons. And then there's enterprise, which is custom. So again, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if there are paying customers on here. It certainly looks like there are. We could probably look it up. Yeah. I'm not sure if they're publicly traded. I really don't know that much about them.
The last time I've heard anything about them was well before AI.
Okay. Right. Yeah.
So NX, you know, Narwhal and NX were traditionally CLI tooling for JavaScript front ends.
Yeah.
So I was surprised when I look at the website now and it's really focusing on...
Well, everyone's pivoted to AI, right?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. But I mean, not just pivoted, like they've just basically forgotten. The way I read their website shows that they've forgotten where they've even come from. And
yeah, yeah.
Like, it's just, this is what we do, which was interesting. Well, anyway, I was just going to say, that's a bit of an aside. So they are established,
right? Yeah.
Yeah, NX has been around for a long time.
So they've got, you know, they've got money. So to your question of does it place undue expectations on or pressure on open source maintainers? No, I don't think so. Certainly not in this case. And I'm looking at their customers page, right? So they've got Man, Cat,
yeah.
Capital One, Hilton, 7-Eleven, Cisco, for how much longer? Who knows? Yeah, you know, they've got some big names in here, VMware. And then down here, FedEx, American Airlines, Adobe, Deloitte, IKEA, Adidas, yeah, Intel, yeah, Vodafone, MailChimp, Moderna, Paramount. And then, you know, there's, I mean, it could go on, Sharp, Sainsbury's, Red Bull, Philips, blah, 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 blah. Popular OSS projects using NX on the list here, Fluent UI, AWS Amplify CLI.
Yep.
You know, like there's potentially a lot of Sentry, right? Material UI. There's potentially a lot of compromised secrets. Shopify, I wouldn't lose any sleep over seeing Shopify go under. That's a whole other episode. Yeah. So there's potentially a lot of compromised projects and secrets here. But again, just to my point, in this particular case, all these requirements and extra things we're talking about, is that putting pressure on them? Yes. And you know, the funny thing is, we talk about people like Jimmy and other smaller maintainers who hopefully do have their house in order, right? And wouldn't have been vulnerable to this attack.
Yeah. But as we keep saying, right, there's maintainer fatigue is a thing.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Right. And, you know, there's so much you can do now around automation, like Copilot, right? So Copilot, I've been using Copilot extensively on GitHub, by the way.
I've started to now too, quite a lot.
Yeah. There are some things that it's not very good at. And, you know, figuring that out and finding the right balance of what you can get it to do. One thing that you can't get it to do is break down things into smaller tasks. So I've tried a few times saying create sub-issues and break this down into these steps, and it just does the whole thing.
So an ex colleague of yours, but someone that, you know, I've come to know recently too, I've seen a post that they put on whereby they build up the backlog themselves. Using another AI agent to create those tasks, but then they assign those to Copilot.
Yeah.
So it's not asking Copilot to break the tasks down smaller, but it's actually giving it smaller, well-defined tasks and just doing one step at a time.
Yeah.
And then...
I've been experimenting and teasing it out, and that's what I've found. If you give it very focused tasks, it's very good at them. And in fact, if you give it Copilot instructions and you give it very detailed instructions, you know, and guidelines there, and then you give it very detailed tasks, it kind of mostly does what you want it to do. And mostly it's done a lot for me, right? But there are some things that I have had to fix.
Yeah.
And some things where, yeah, because sometimes I'll sort of give it feedback on the PR and I'll sort of say, can you change this? Can you change that? And usually it does. And there have just been some things where it just hasn't been able to. And one that was such a clusterfuck, I had to close the PR, delete the branch, and like start from scratch because it just couldn't fix, and I couldn't fix what it had done either. And I mean, sorry, that's not true. Like the issue was one of my favorite rants, rebasing, right?
Yeah.
So basically it screwed up a rebase and it couldn't understand that its code wasn't compiling. And it said, I've checked the branch. There's no merge conflicts. It's fine. I was like, fine, I'll do it. And I pulled it down and I started going through this rebase and I was like, oh, my favorite thing in the world. And then I just thought, why bother? Like, why bother? Start I just again. Deleted the branch and the PR and just start again. And then starting off main anyway.
By that stage, you didn't invest much time and effort to get to that point, right?
No, exactly.
Yeah.
No. So, but by and large, I've been very happy with it. Anyway, where I was going with this, it was in terms of this fatigue thing, right? So one of the ways that you can address it is with Copilot, right? So you can have Copilot review your PRs and, you know, obviously we've got the DefenderBot, and we've got all kinds of other tools that you can have running.
Yeah.
But the problem then is signal to noise, right? So the amount of email spam I get now from Copilot, because every time it pushes a commit or edits a comment, and then when it wants you to review a PR and then, you know, doing changes, and you can just get lost in noise. So it's kind of, it's a double-edged sword, you know? So is it actually helping you, or is it just making it worse because it's drowning out the important things in the signal to noise?
Yeah, look, I see what you're saying, but I generally filter out a lot of the GitHub email noise anyway.
Right.
Right. So I just generally will be working within the confines of GitHub itself rather than checking the emails and seeing what's happening. Right. So
no, I understand that, but unless you're actively sitting there on GitHub all day, every day, you're not going to get an alert.
No, that's true. But I guess unlike a paid employee where you need to make sure that they've got work to do whilst during work hours.
Yeah.
Right. Copilot can work when you want it to work.
Yeah, that's true.
So you don't have to be, not that I would be on the case for an employee, but like to use the analogy, right? You don't have to be on its case all the time. You can let it sit for another couple of hours or a day or so before you come back to it.
Yeah.
And the actual beauty there, and the big difference there is you don't have to worry about context switching with the Copilot, right? So, well, you have to personally worry about the context switching within your own brain, right? Coming back to what were we working on in this PR? What tasks are we trying to achieve? And to your point about the rebates issue, right? A lot of the merging stuff, and you know, if you've got a bit of back and forward, that's a lot easier to tackle in the moment.
Yes.
But if you go out, have your dinner and come back, or you come back the next day, picking up where you left off, I always find that quite challenging to where were
Absolutely.
We?
Absolutely. And just to add some context to that, right? The amount of tech debt that I've paid down over the past 2 weeks from like dating back years.
Yep.
Because, you know, these things, and as time goes on, I've lost more and more focus and context on it. And I'm just like, oh, you know, what was I going to do here? What's the problem? Blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, other things take priority. And, you know, now I've just gone back through a whole bunch of old repos and old issues, things that are unimportant. Well, they're not unimportant, but they're less important because they're tech debt, right?
Yeah.
So they're things that, you know, I know that one day that's going to come back to bite me in the ass, but right now it's not worth me putting time on, but I can just assign it to Copilot, problem solved.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mostly, you know, and it's been very effective.
And the other one too, the other flip side is having Copilot review your PRs. So the flip side where you're the actual one doing the work.
Yeah.
And especially when you're on a small team and you may not have others around as responsive to be able to check in on your PRs.
Yeah.
To be able to have Copilot at least do a first scan across and do a sanity check for you, I think is quite valuable too.
It is good. And that's something I've been using for a couple of years now. And it's very good. Absolutely. I do find that it's not always right. It's very often right. And, you know, I mean, I'm nitpicking because it's like probably above 99% of the time it's correct. But sometimes it just gets things wrong and it's missing context. And sometimes it says things that are just patently incorrect. And, you know, like other times I've had things, you know, where I've got, say, an issue and it's got like five sub-issues, right? And it's broken down into steps. Step one, do this. Step two, do this. Step three, do this. And I'm, you know, I've got a PR for step three. And, you know, Copilot will comment on it saying, you know, you really should be doing this here. I'm like, yep, that's in step four.
Yep. Yeah, yeah. But again, like with any AI-based tool, right, that's, you need to use your own intelligence, right? Just because Copilot's made a comment against your PR doesn't mean you have to stop the build right then and there and prevent the merge.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Right. And then that goes, though, I mean, that's even like with a human PR, right? Sometimes, yes, some absolutely. Comments are going to be absolutely, you need to fix this. Other comments are just stylistic and maybe just a bit more conversational.
Yeah. So I agree. And, you know, I think there's a couple of things I want to just unpack there. The first one is I actually recorded a video a couple of years ago, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, I can't remember, with Luke about PRs, right? And I can't remember whether this ever got released. I don't know if it did. I think it may not have for whatever reason, but we recorded this video and it was about PRs, right? And we were talking about merge debt. Right. And we were talking about how to avoid merge debt. Right.
Yep.
And there's this kind of thinking that as a maintainer or whatever, you know, you've got to, you know, avoid merge debt. You've got to make sure your PRs are getting merged in. And, you know, as a contributor, you've got to do that as well. And we kind of thought, well, yeah, but what about the how? Right. What are some actionable tips we can give to people for making sure your PR gets merged? Like it you know. And one of them is something that I've been talking about for a long time is what I like to call the single responsibility principle. And this is way off topic. This is a tangent, right? But single responsibility principle for PRs, right? So we talk about single responsibility principle in code.
Yeah.
Where, you know, a change to one module shouldn't impact another effectively or shouldn't impact logic owned by another module kind of thing. And same thing with PRs, right? If you keep your PRs small and focused, it means that if you have to roll something back, the blast radius is small and it also lowers the cognitive load for reviewers. And that was one of the tips. And there was a few other tips as well. But the main point that we were trying to get across is that it's not an adversarial process. Everyone involved in this process, it has a shared goal of getting this PR merged, right?
Yep.
Of improving this product. your goal as a reviewer is not to poke holes in it or red team it. I mean, yes, absolutely. If you see something, say something, right? Don't let bad code get merged. But your goal as a reviewer is to work with that person to get it merged. And your goal as someone that's creating the PR is to make it easy for people to review it. And the point is, you know, the non-adversarial aspect. And when you think about a tool like Copilot, yeah, you know, Copilot isn't just arbitrarily blocking you. And it's not an adversarial process. Like those suggestions are suggestions and they're helpful a lot of the time. And then but if they're not, if you're in that scenario that you described, which is where you're on your own or in a small team and you're using Copilot because you don't have anyone else to review it, it's up to you to decide what to do with that feedback.
Yeah, absolutely.
But the same thing applies to all these other tools as well. And this is the whole point about, you know, AI or any of these tools. Ultimately, you're responsible. You're using these things to help you, that you're not. I mean, yes, we're talking about agentic systems, right? And we're talking about agents and we're talking about giving them the power to do things autonomously. But that doesn't necessarily mean giving them the keys to the kingdom. And if you think about this in the corporate world, if you think about your workforce has autonomy. Your staff have agency. They can go and do things. But you do still have gates that have to be passed. You don't, from a corporate perspective, you have policies that people have to adhere to. And then you have mechanisms for gatekeeping those policies, whether it's people, you know, gatekeepers, levels of escalation, whether it's quality gates, what have you. And when you're using agents, AI agents, you have to do the same thing. You can't just give them the keys to the kingdom. And not because AI bad, not because AI not smart, but because you don't do that with other humans either.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, yeah.
And just to kind of wrap this, to loop this back to some shameless self-promotion, this whole thing is making me laugh because a couple of weeks ago, I wrote some docs and ironically used Copilot to help me write those docs.
Yeah.
And I'm just looking at the website blake-ssg.org and I'm looking at the documentation for Blake. I'm looking at section 2, page site templates. And as you scroll down, and there's some documentation here about using site templates, blah, 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 template registry. So something that I've done with Blake let's not make this an episode about Blake, but something you don't see with other static site generators is I've got this concept of a template registry. So from the CLI, you can actually list out templates and you can create a site from a template. Whereas if you look at something like, you know, Hugo or Jekyll or what have you, the tool is baked into the template and, you know, you just find a template that you like. Whereas with Blake, the tool is on your machine. It's a CLI and you can search for templates that way. Anyway, so I've got this whole thing about templates and the template registry. Warning, security considerations. Users should exercise the same caution with site templates as with any other packages. You are responsible for ensuring you trust the code you're executing on your computer. The template registry does not provide guarantees of safety, but does make template discovery easier and will provide minimum baseline guarantees when planned template validation work is completed. And I wrote this because I was thinking, if I'm going to give people access to templates directly from my tool, what level of responsibility do I have for safeguarding those? And I was thinking about plugins, right? So Blake is extensible. Like it intentionally does the absolute bare minimum by design, and it's extensible via plugins. And I'm thinking about having a plugin registry as well for having plugins discoverable. And I've got some tests planned so if you want to get your plugin or your site template listed in the registry, I was going to have some tests planned. And I was toying with this idea for a long time about, do I block it if it makes HTTP calls during execution? And I won't go into the thought process and the long and agonizing decision-making process that went into that. I ultimately decided not to do that. But, you know, I had to think about it and I had to sort of think as a maintainer of this tool, as ostensibly the curator of these packages and these plugins, do I bear any responsibility for their safety? And I think yes, to an extent. And, you know, there are some safeguards that will be in place and some tests that I will run. And I think if something does, and I decided not to fail it. What I was going to do was effectively have it firewalled rather than just detect HTTP calls. And if it fails to build, it fails to build, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, potentially do some other stuff around detecting HTTP calls. And then I decided not to block it because there may be legitimate reasons for making an HTTP call during your build process. I don't know. So what I decided instead was to have this warning here and also have a warning if you have a site template or you have a plugin that does that, that information will be in the registry alongside, that will be part of the metadata so people can see it and make an informed decision.
Yeah.
But ultimately, the consumers are responsible.
Yeah. Buyer beware.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. So this conversation has taken a meandering walk through the woods, right?
That sounds so unlike us.
I know. We started speaking about the supply chain attack with the NX repo.
Yeah.
Then we've gone meandered through there into using Copilot to both produce code and review our code. Now we've somehow found ourselves with a shameless plug about your useless static site generator.
Useless?
Isn't that the term you use, or
boring?
Boring. Sorry, not useless. My mistake.
Yeah, but let's not talk about that.
Okay. We'll save that for another episode.
Well, we'll see. Yeah. But yes, I guess the reason I brought that up was a little bit of a shameless plug, but mostly because I remember when reading about this incident last week, and I remember thinking and chuckling to myself that it was literally maybe 2 weeks earlier that I'd written that warning in my documentation, and it just made me chuckle. And that's why I was kind of looping that back to that, because we're talking about the pressure on the maintainers. And yes, that's real and that's true. Same as I said, do I bear some responsibility here with this? And yes, I do. But ultimately, at the end of the day, the responsibility falls on the users. Now, it's all well and good saying that, but the reality is, as we know, that's about as meaningless as how many AI tokens or credits you get. Because it's, the reality is, how is anyone expected to keep up with all this all the time?
Yeah. I mean, I struggle. I really do. I think to keep up with it, you need to take a leaf out of Yuli's book. Just read as much as you can and consume as much as you can. And if you don't understand something, ask AI to interpret it for you.
Well, yeah. Yeah, true.
But I was going to say, part of the irony too was, I'm trying to find it right now on the Narwhal blog site. I think you posted a link too, quite ironically, how on their own blog, they mentioned the supply chain attack.
Yeah, that
preventing supply chain attacks. I'm just trying to find it.
They've probably taken it down now. Let's have a look. No, it's still there. Is your build cache giving every developer production access? Posted June 25th, 2025. So that was, it was probably what inspired the attacker. when did the malicious code get, when did it happen? I don't know. We could look it up, but.
Well, I'm just looking at the chat that we've got going. And I think that was the 27th of August.
Yeah.
Was when that sort of all kicked off on our 27th. Yeah. Kicked off on our side of things.
Brilliant. Yes. The irony there is beautiful.
So where to from here? I think this just goes to show, Matt, like we are, I guess the technology is moving so much quicker than we had, well, we as a developer community and just as a community in general that we're quite ready for, right? The technology is just progressing so fast, so rapidly that we're all coming to terms with not only its uses, but the abuse scenarios that can really cost us.
Yeah.
I think that's quite scary in some respect.
You're right. In another respect, it's not new, really. It's a new facet to the same thing. You know, the challenge of keeping up with security challenges and the fast pace of threat changes, you know, that's not new. It's just now we've just got a different angle to it. We've got a novel vector here, which is the AI angle. But yes, I do wonder, because there's just so much to keep up with, you know, security, AI, compliance. It's a constant battle to just stay above water. And I do wonder how people find time to innovate, because that's what we're all here for, really, isn't it?
Absolutely. Look, I think that's a whole different discussion. And I think that we can save that one for another episode. But I completely agree with you, right? I'm burnt out by this side of things. I'd rather just, like you said, innovate. But at the same time, there's other personalities who love that. Who love...
Yeah, for sure.
You know, and that's what they want to do. Like, they don't want to innovate like you or I. They're, you know, the security researchers, albeit a previous role that I was at, you know, we had a great support team and like they just loved what they were doing. And being that first line of, well, not first line of defense, but first line of if shit was hitting the fan, they were the ones in there making sure, or triaging and making sure everything was up and running and the systems were just working 100%, right? It's a different mentality. It's a different personality.
Yeah.
Personally, I don't get it.
Right. Yeah.
I don't get it, but I'm sure other people do.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, some people love that. You're absolutely right. Yeah. Well, you remember when, speaking of CrowdStrike, which we've mentioned a few times, when that incident occurred and we were, or at least I was, I'm sure we both were, expressing our undying gratitude for those people that were working tirelessly over the weekend to get the internet back online.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, this time I'll express my gratitude for those folks that, as you just described, love to just stay ahead of the game and you know, just want to make sure that all the green check marks stay green check marks.
Well, not just green check marks. I mean, there's a lot more. Like, as we've just covered through, right? The green check mark can stay green, but you don't know what's happening under the covers.
That's true. Yeah.
So, Matt, it's getting late. I'm tired. I know you've said you didn't have a great night's sleep last night. So I guess that's it for this episode of the Beer Driven Devs.
Yep, I agree. We've rung this one out. I'm Matt Goldman.
I'm Liam Elliott. Cheers.
Cheers.
The Beer Driven Devs podcast is recorded and produced on Dharawal and Darkinjung land.
Hello.
Hey, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good. Hey, you don't look like shit.
I feel like it.
You don't look like it.
We are recording, by the way, because I got a new thing that popped up in Teams and said, do you want to auto-record? I was like, fuck it.